Greg Harrington now will explain us another strategy, which means to alter the games, to make it compatible to recent system, and to broaden the possibilities to access these games and to play these games. Greg Harrington is a PhD candidate at the School of Computer Science, Engineering and Mathematics at Flinders University. And he's presenting a project which he's doing together with Denise DeVries, who will join us at the panel after the presentation of Greg, please.
I'd like to speak to you today about the work I've been doing over the past few months now in the context of the Play It Again project at Flinders University, although you'll see on the next couple of slides there are a number of partner institutions. So my involvement has been in the capacity of the third bullet point here to create a software tool that's basically to migrate the legacy BASIC games to more modern JavaScript format to run in a web browser. Eventually, it'll end up on the Play It Again website, so people will be able to experience a version of these BASIC games. My work is not intended to replace existing emulators. It's just an alternative approach. I'll go into the reasons behind that a little later. So next, here are the partner institutions, and we've been lucky enough to have people from each of these institutions together for once. It's not often we're in the same room. The basic steps in my software tool are as follows, and they're along the lines of what any compiler would do. The first three steps I've implemented in Python, and the final step of the JavaScript runtime is basically just a library of routines which mimic the kinds of things that the original hardware would do. Services provided by the operating system, like redrawing a screen, drawing character graphics. I've used a black box kind of approach by observing the, now in this case I've actually observed the emulator running. I perhaps should have been basing this on the original hardware, but for my purposes as a proof of concept, I basically just made something to provide a similar look and feel to what the emulator provided without knowing exactly how the proprietary operating system software did its job. I wrote code to do the same thing. So there are the three Python scripts. If we get time, I'll show you those briefly. I used the data as it was in memory as my basis for the Python scripts. So basic programs are not stored as plain text on the original hardware. The commands that you would be familiar with from if you've had any experience writing basic programs, things like print and go to and for next loops, they're not stored as text, they're tokenized, so they will basically show up as hexadecimal digits. But before I go on, I've just realized that I meant to mention on the previous slide, when I talked about the partner organizations, I also meant to mention the co-author of the associated paper and my supervisor, Denise DeVries. I'd like to thank her for her support. These are the kinds of keywords that you'd find in the original BASIC. Now, in the Python tool that I used for the lexing and parsing of the code, they had a Dartmouth BASIC interpreter, which I extended to include the full set of commands for Commodore BASIC. So as you can see, there are a few more commands in Commodore BASIC, but basically anything interesting like graphics or sound, you end up doing by manipulating memory. There are no convenient commands for plotting or playing sounds. This is mainly because the Commodore never expected people to use BASIC for a serious purpose, so they provided a version of primitive version of BASIC that was used in previous models of the hardware. However, I say this because the same version of BASIC is used across the Commodore 64, VIC-20, and PET machines. The machine I chose to focus upon was the VIC-20, basically because of its simplicity. There are no tile-based sprite graphics to implement. Any animation is done by redefining the character set. So it was a little simpler than the Commodore 64 to implement, but it was similar enough that I can later hopefully go on and adapt what I've done to work for Commodore 64 games. So I show here a fragment of an original BASIC program from a book by Clifford Ramshaw. Later on in the slides, you'll see the cover of that book and also a demo. Now, in the middle is the data as it would appear in memory. So BASIC programs start at around location 1000 in hexadecimal, 1600 in normal figures, decimal. But you can see there on the far right, some fragments are recognizable, such as the 650,255, whereas the commands themselves show up as tokens greater than 128 in base 10. So any two-digit hex numbers there bigger than 80 will be something like print or poke. Now, with the print command, there was an issue because although Commodore's version of ASCII is similar to the version of ASCII used on the PC and Unicode, some characters like the normal printable alphabet characters will have the same value. However, there will be some unprintable characters like the inverted love heart you see there, which clears the screen. So part of the support routines I wrote would render the printable characters on the screen and also perform the correct behavior for the unprintable characters, clear the screen, change the color, move the cursor, things like that. I've implemented the unprintable characters as escaped hexadecimal. You can see right down the very bottom, I've put in hex 93 and hex 1C to represent those two unprintable characters. So here you see an intermediate form that was created using the Ply, Lexer, and Parser. I've, for convenience, split it up so that there's one statement per line. The original BASIC allows for several statements in one line separated by colons. Now, the second Python script I showed earlier basically takes that ASCII representation in the middle of this slide and converts it to a representation down the bottom, which is convenient to translate into JavaScript. So all of the keywords have been recognized and expressions have been manipulated into a form that's easy to translate into JavaScript. So I should touch on the differences between Commodore BASIC and Dartmouth BASIC. Dartmouth BASIC is fairly primitive. There were no strings. Whereas Commodore BASIC supports a variety of data types such as integers, floating point, and strings. This is showing the end result of running those Python scripts. I end up with a generator function in JavaScript, which is significant because it was a limitation of the JavaScript language that meant that if I wanted to pause execution to perform any kind of busy waiting for the user's input or something like that, it was very difficult to do this under certain circumstances. For instance, if I wanted to pause in the middle of a control flow primitive like a for loop and then resume execution from the middle of that for loop, I could rewrite the for loops to be basically while loops with counters, avoid doing the initialization more than once and end up with something that does the same thing as the original for loop. However, I found it to be desirable to use the same control flow primitives in JavaScript, a for statement, as was used in the original language. So I didn't want to change things too much. That's why I looked at using the yield keyword, which is only available in Firefox at the moment, but hopefully will be implemented by the rest of the browsers since it is part of the upcoming ECMAScript 6. This is showing the meaningful part of the JavaScript code. The three lines of basic code are translated. Now, the array of bytes for memory, I've used unsigned 8-bit integers, which is not too exciting, but I guess something like screen print is a little more involved because of dealing with those unprintable characters. I've already talked about the yield statement. Here is an example that's intended to show, first of all, where the yield statement might be useful, pausing in the middle of a for loop, and also an example of the kind of optimization I've done. Pretty much everything is a one-for-one translation. One line of BASIC becomes one line of JavaScript, except for things like backward branches within a for loop. The reason why I've gone about it this way is because it's, in order to provide the capability of branching, I've used a switch and case construct to work as a program counter. Now, I have to abandon that for a for loop because I'm not able to have the for loop spanning several cases. So, in order to provide the branching semantics, I've implemented it using a loop within a loop. So basically the backwards branch there becomes a loop inside of the for loop. Instead of the branching semantics I used earlier, which would be to modify the next variable, which is the condition for the switch. I won't mention any more about the yield. I think I've covered that in enough detail. Now, this is the book that I took some examples from, which I'll show you in just a minute. So I guess to provide the authentic experience, I should laboriously type them line for line, but that would take too long, which I suppose is valuable because I guess many people's experience of learning things like debugging, because inevitably you make small errors with those programs, would be to type in a listing and then find, oh, it doesn't work, and then go back and find where the mistakes were. And to do that in an intelligent way and not type the whole thing again, you need to have some understanding of tracing control flow. The only part of the original ROM I used were the shapes of the characters. So here I'm just showing how the values along the right-hand side there map to bits where a 1 would indicate a lit pixel and a 0 an unlit pixel. So you can see that 66 corresponding to the second bottom row, you can see how that would render on the screen. And as I said before, there are no tile-based graphics, so basically any animation was done by changing these characters or using the inbuilt ones, which there were some graphics characters in addition to the normal alphabet. So rather than talk about the JavaScript template, because we're running towards the end of the presentation, I'll switch to the web browser and show you an example running. Or maybe if I have time, I'll bring it up in the emulator so you can compare. Saw earlier what they could do. I was going to say prepare to be amazed. You saw what they could do with 4K before. This is done with less. The machine only has 3.5 kilobytes, and I think this is maybe using a kilobyte or so. That's what it looks like under emulation. My license has expired. The sound is very repetitive and annoying. I haven't implemented sound yet. Here is something similar running under Firefox. I haven't actually completed a lap yet. There you can see it's between 1 and 2 kilobytes, closer to 2 kilobytes. And now another example is a simple card game. There's a slight bug, so I'll manipulate things slightly in that. It won't let me input a negative number. I'm not recognizing the minus. Whereas in the emulator I can, and it doesn't check. So this is stand or hit respectively. And it's a tricky decision. I think I will hit. I would like to say I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. However, it seems that I'm almost out of time. So for future work, I would like to try and implement other dialects of BASIC or the machine code for the Commodore systems based on the 6502 processor. Thank you for your time.